Auckland was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when he was 4 years old back in 2013 and founded Lachlan's Legacy at the age of just 12 with the support of his wonderful mum, Leslie. Welcome both to Diabetes Chat, Leslie and Lachlan. How are you both?
Great, thanks. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Excellent, welcome to the Diabetes Chat. So we're basically going to have a little chat through Lachlan's diagnosis story. We'll chat a bit about being a parent carer of someone with type 1 diabetes, and then we'll go on to a little bit more about Lachlan's journey, the charity and so on. But before we get on to that, we just want to get to know you both a little bit more. Tom, I think you're heading up this section, just sort of doing our sort of quick fire questions, like just to let us get to know you both a bit better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So hello, Leslie. Hello, Lachlan. Nice to have you both here tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to have some fun, quick fire questions. So the point of this is just super quick. And then we'll go into more detail with Tony a little bit more about your diabetes journey and when you were diagnosed. But just to get to know you as well a little bit. And Leslie, it's primarily Lachlan, but I might ask you one or two questions as well. So a bit of fun. Let's have a look. Lachlan, when were you diagnosed and how old were you when you were diagnosed?
I was diagnosed when I was 4 and I'm 14, so 10 years ago.
10 years. Wow, you've got that like stamp. You've done 10 years in living with diabetes. Amazing. Well done, buddy. Do you use finger pricks or do you use smart technology like Flash CGM?
I use the Libre, but I sometimes need to do finger pricks, but I don't do it that often. I just go off my Libre.
When would you do finger pricks?
If my scanner stopped working, it does that a wee bit too often.
Yeah. If it doesn't let you scan or it's like, is it that 10-minute warning thing? It's like, yes, recheck in 10 minutes. It's like, actually, I'll do a finger prick. See what happens. Do you use insulin pens or a pump?
I was on the pump. I'm now on insulin pens.
What pump were you on?
I was on the Medtronic. I went and I'm now on the pens, and I'm hoping to go on the Omnipod this year.
Brilliant stuff. And which do you prefer? Obviously, if you've had that experience of pens and pump, which one have you preferred in that time of that 10 years of diabetes?
I would say my pens. I feel much more free when I'm on my pens and I'm not connected to something when I'm on the pump.
And I guess that's where maybe looking at the Omnipod may be great, because then it's like a patch pump and it's not tube and all that sort of stuff, right?
Exactly.
Brilliant stuff. Are you hypo aware?
Yes.
What symptoms do you have when you have a hypo?
My legs go a bit jelly and I start to look kind of drift away and look where my focus.
What's your go-to hypo treatment, Lachlan?
I use dextrose or Haribo.
And Mum, let's bring Leslie into this. What would your go-to hypo treatment be if you were if you had diabetes, do you reckon?
Oh, I think probably jelly babies. Usually Mum and have jelly babies, I always have a couple at the same time. But yeah, he's kind of off jelly babies. I think he gets sick of using them. So we've now moved on to dextrose, and now and again he'll go into Tangfastics. That's his kind of favourite.
Oh yes. Have you ever had a one of Lachlan's dextros to see what it tastes like?
Yeah, I've tried them and I really don't particularly like them. We tried the dextrose pouches as well just recently.
Yes.
It's absolutely disgusting, so we'll avoid it.
What do you think's worse, Lachlan? Feeling hypo or feeling hyper?
Depends on my situation. If I'm playing football, I hate being high, because it makes my mouth go really dry. But if I'm at school or out with my friends, I hate being low, because it makes me like I can't do anything for 10 minutes, so we need to just stop.
You have to stop and treat and act and then decide the course of action. Yeah, totally get that, my friend. Question for both of you, really. One thing you like about diabetes and one thing you don't like about diabetes. Let's start with Leslie.
Oh, there's many a thing you could say you don't like about diabetes. I think probably the one thing that I do like, and I think Lachlan might agree with this one, is, and I know he's in a lucky situation, but having type 1 diabetes opens an awful lot of doors and it gives Lachlan a lot of opportunities that probably a lot of people living with type 1 don't have, but he wouldn't have been on the journey that he has been so far if he didn't have type 1 diabetes. So I think in that sense, you know, we have to be very thankful for it because of the experiences that he's had. But the thing that I would probably say is I don't like is the fact that you have to watch your child go through something that you just want to take off them. And that's a really difficult thing to do as a parent, is to be able to, you know, watch your child go through certain things that are really difficult at times, you know, various things with mental health and just everything that goes alongside living with type 1 diabetes and not really being able to A, fully understand how it feels, but also not being able to take it away from them. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I don't like about it.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Lachlan? One thing you like, one thing you don't like.
My mum, what I like about type 1, I get to explore the adventures, maybe the way I wouldn't have got if I didn't have type 1. But the thing I dislike, maybe, possibly the challenges that I face every day. It's an unending battle. I just fight it every day and it'll never go away.
Absolutely. It's relentless, isn't it? It's 24/7. There's no holiday. It's always there. And it's tough. And a big well done for everything you do to manage your diabetes, and a big partner back for your mum as well, like supporting you. We talk about type F's, don't we, like the friends and family, the people that are there for us. And Leslie, equally, you're equally on that journey, I guess, with Lachlan, with the diabetes, other than, like you say, is you don't really know how he's 100% feeling. Yeah, you're not in them sort of shoes, but everything else, you're with him, supporting him, so that's amazing. Question for the both of you, really, is thoughts on the smell of insulin. Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you have no thoughts on it?
I'll go first. I think it reminds me of the hospital. Anytime I go into the hospital, I just think it either smells insulin, or anytime I smell insulin, I think it's the hospital. So it probably reminds me of the hospital, so I kind of like it.
And what about you, Leslie?
Yeah, I really like the smell of insulin. Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe it's a comforting thing. I don't know. But yeah, I quite like the smell of insulin.
There we go, guys. I can get a 2-for-1 deal on insulin perfume for a Christmas present for you guys. Right, I'll put that on my shopping list. If you're on a desert island, what 3 things would you take? We can ask both of you this question. And Lachlan, I'm going to be very kind. I'm going to give you all your diabetes kit. So all your diabetes injections and your flash, your Libra, everything's there, your hypo treatments. What 3 things would you take? Just to get to know you, a bit of fun.
A knife. I would take my phone that has Kelly TV on it so I can still watch the Kelly games. I'm a big Cole Marlock fan. And my dog.
There we go. A knife, a phone with the telly, and your dog. Brilliant stuff. And what about you, Leslie?
I think
what you take.
I would probably take a bottle of gin. Because I might need it on my own. What else would I take? Probably Lachlan, so I wasn't alone. And then I could annoy him and, you know, we could do that together and adventure together. Yeah, probably my mobile phone, because I don't think I could live without it.
Absolutely. Brilliant stuff, guys. I think that was just like a fun segment just to get to know you guys a little bit. But I'm going to hand over back to Tony, who's going to head up our next section, taking us on your journey, Lachlan, of when you were diagnosed with diabetes, when you were 4 years old, like you said, you've been living it 10 years now. But we're going to have questions for both Lachlan and Leslie, hearing from 2 perspectives. Lachlan, who's got diabetes, and Leslie, who's a super mom, supporting her type 1 warrior. So back to you, Tony.
Excellent, thanks. I just want to chat Lachlan's diagnosis story, and like Tom says, I sort of jump between both of you on different questions. But we'll start with you, Lachlan. So you said you were diagnosed when you were just 4, and that was 10 years ago. Do you have any memories of that time?
Well, I've not really known any life without type 1, so I don't really remember before it. But I've saw videos and pictures of me in the hospital. But I was 1 week into primary one, and I remember going into class one day, drinking a Capri Sun. I don't know why I remember it, but I just get looked up by the whole class, and they were all like, they didn't understand it. But I just remember that was one of my memories. It's really odd, but that is one of my memories.
No, I think that's fair enough. I mean, you were only 4 at the time, so, you know, I can't imagine you were having the great big life formative experiences, but it's really interesting just to hear what kind of things you do remember from the time. And Leslie, I imagine you probably had quite a lot of memories from that point and a lot of complicated feelings as well. Do you want to maybe talk through some of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I always remember, like, the lead up to Lachlan being diagnosed with type 1, and we didn't know there was something wrong, but we just knew that it just wasn't right, if that makes sense. And it was a really hot summer that year, and Lachlan's quite a bit of a worrier, and the bedwetting had kind of started, and we thought he's just worrying about going to school, being at school, you know, that sort of thing. And even as a baby, Lachlan loved drinking milk, but he had almost got to the stage he was substituting food for milk. So he wasn't eating an awful lot, but he was drinking milk constantly. And we thought there was a possible urine infection. So I remember the night before that he was diagnosed, I remember that I had been out at a Young Farmers event, and Lachlan had gone to bed at 7:30. And by 8:15, he had a wet bed. And I had come in about 10:30, and his bed had been changed, and by 10:45 his bed was wet again, and we thought there's something far wrong here. So we had sample bottles in the house for whatever reason, I have no idea. We got a sample from him and handed it into the doctor surgery the next morning, and within 20 minutes of me handing it in after dropping him off at school, we were on our way to accident and emergency, and the doctors had thought, you know, he had type 1 diabetes. And at that point, I think it's a really odd way to describe it, but I don't know if there was a bit of a relief, because we did think, is it something, you know, at the time, is it much more sinister? Who knew type 1 diabetes was going to be like this? Because I didn't know an awful lot about it. We had heard about it, obviously. And I remember going to get him at school to take him to hospital, and he was coming back from the toilet, and that was the first time I had noticed how much weight he had actually lost and how ill he actually looked. So we got to hospital, and yeah, he was diagnosed with type 1, spent a night in the hospital, and we got out the next day. So it was a huge challenge. And I remember the first time that they asked us to do the insulin injection, and Lachlan was obviously screaming the place down, because, you know, what 4-year-old or what any person wants, you know, an injection given to them. And I remember the nurse's exact words saying, if you don't do this and you don't do it now, he's going to die. And I think that will stay with me forever. And after it, I did the injection and I walked away because I didn't want Lachlan to see me upset. And I remember bursting into tears in the corridor. And Fiona, his nurse, came out and she gave me a huge hug and she said, I'm so sorry for being so blunt, Leslie. She said, but if we're not blunt, it's not something that we can pussyfoot about. You need to do this because this is life from now on. And, you know, it was heartbreaking. And then it gets to the stage you feel as if you've got a new baby with you all the time. After diagnosis, it feels as if you brought home a new baby, and it's a huge learning curve. But we're almost 10 years in. He's diversities at the end of August, and every single day we'll learn something new about type 1 diabetes. So it's a learning curve that is going to last for a long, long time.
Wow, that is amazing, Liz. Just starting from how just how that would have just led sort of whirlwinds at the hospital from that to he's gonna die if you don't get this injection. It must have been an awful lot. That's quite a traumatic jump in such a short period of time.
Yeah, it absolutely was. But I think once you take the time to process the information that's been given to you, you then start to think, okay, we can do this, you know. And we had really recently, we had a really good friend of ours whose son was going through leukemia, and he was really, really, really unwell, very, very unwell. And I remember thinking, you know, they're going through such a hard time and they're putting such a brave face on it. This is something that Lachlan can live with. You know, at the time, you don't know what it's going to be like ahead of us, but that there wasn't a diagnosis of, you know, like, this could be life ending soon. It wasn't anything like that at all. You know, he wasn't going to have to get chemo or anything of the sort. And not that there's a comparison to cancer or anything, because type 1 diabetes, you know, there's a cure for cancer, not all of them. Type 1 diabetes, you know, is very, very difficult. But in your early diagnosis, you have no idea what that's like. So, yeah, it was a huge roller coaster. But we have the most supportive friends and family. And I think that's absolutely what got us through. But I think looking back, the one person that got Scott and I through all of it was Lachlan, because he was so brave. And within probably 2-3 days of diagnosis, we started, and, you know, insulin therapy and everything, we started to get our own wee boy back. You know, he started to be the wee boy that we loved, that wasn't grumpy all the time and wasn't upset and all of that sort of thing. And we started to get our wee boy back. And I think that changed everything for us, because we thought, this is life as it is, and we're going to deal with it, and we're going to deal with it as a family. And that's what we've done every day since.
Wow, absolutely. So that's a lot of the... A wee bit further ahead, do you have any, like, strong memories or stories you'd like to share from sort of early post-diagnosis, you know, things like maybe the first hypo? Do you remember what that was like?
I can tell this story. Lachlan doesn't remember it, but I wasn't at home, and it was Scott, Lachlan's dad. Again, I was at Young Farmers Concert Practice at the time, and Scott phoned me and he's like, oh my god, whole drama. It was funny, you know, the typical man reaction. Apologies to any men, but it was a total typical man reaction. He's like, what did I do? And I remember Lachlan in the background saying, it's all right, dad, just give me some jelly babies. And I thought, he's 4 years old, and he was telling his dad what to do. So yeah, that was the first hypo, and I wasn't there to witness it. And I remember being on the other end of the phone crying because I wasn't there, and you think, that's just ridiculous. But yeah,
that's brilliant. I love that Lachlan's like, it's just jelly babies, that's it.
Yeah, just do that. Do you remember anything, Lachlan?
It wasn't that recent after, but I remember one story when I was high. I was at a football tournament with my football team at the time, and I didn't check before I started. So I went into the game and my bloods were screaming high, and the ball comes in for a cross, and it was along the ground, and I go to kick it and completely miss and fall on my bum.
Yeah, you did. That's right. He was spinning in circles.
But you know what I think is so great is, obviously these things are serious, but it's important to sometimes see the funny side in these things, and it's a real credit.
Tony, we keep losing you now and again. You're coming in and out. I don't know if that's happening just here at our end, but I don't know. We're kind of losing a wee bit of you now and again. Wait, I can't hear you just now. Sorry.
Maybe we've lost Tony. I know he's had a few tech issues, but absolutely, I think like you both sort of saying, it's diabetes is it's hard, isn't it? And it's a serious condition, but there are moments where I guess you can look back now and you can kind of remember it and maybe laugh or cry. It's the saying is that blood, sweat and tears, and yeah, I guess it's good to remember these things at times. So let's just have a check where Tony got up to. Leslie, did you know much about diabetes before Lachlan was diagnosed, or was this completely new?
Kind of both, if I'm going to be honest. So years gone by, I was a special care dental nurse, and we obviously had patients with type 1 diabetes, but it was, we had a, as part of our dental nurse training, it was touched upon probably for about half an hour. And, you know, you might come across patients with type 1. So I had a very brief overview of the condition, but I wouldn't know, I can't say that I knew anything about it. You know, I knew type 1 diabetes, it was an autoimmune condition, and I knew people took insulin. You know, that was about the knowledge that I had of type 1 diabetes, you know. And if people were filling in, you know, like their medical histories and stuff, and they type 1, you know, it kind of then got handed over to the dentist and they continued with the stuff. But so we didn't really get an awful lot of information, even, you know, training in the in a medical profession. But I had heard about it, but absolutely not to, I couldn't say, you know, I knew an awful lot about it, because, you know, it was very, very limited. As everyone says, the night before, you know, diagnosis, we didn't know much about it, but my goodness, the day of diagnosis, you learn. And you learn quickly.
And it must have been tough. You bring it home, your four-year-old who's been recently diagnosed with diabetes, and you're responsible to care and manage them and learn as much information about diabetes, and it's probably a bit of a whirlwind, like taking in the whole situation. And like I say, it's being responsible for your loved one and checking his levels, because I guess at the time you would have been using finger pricks, injecting for your four-year-old. I guess there is a challenging for you, especially them early days, right?
Yeah, the early days were really, really tough. And as I say, Lachlan was just, he kind of just got on with it. Obviously, it wasn't, you know, there was no days where we didn't have tears, because we did have tears, and he didn't want it, he didn't understand, you know, why he couldn't, you know, have food without having an injection, that sort of thing. But Lachlan absolutely made life for us easier. But I do remember, you know, putting him to bed at night and just sitting crying on the stairs outside, you know, and not sleeping. Even now I still wake up during the night, and I don't think from Lachlan's day of diagnosis to now that I have properly slept an entire night. And that almost 10 years, and I don't really think that'll ever go away. So yeah, it is really tough, but becomes of life, I think, and I think it has to very quickly.
Of course, yeah, 100%. And like now, we look at now is we have amazing technology like Flash, like Libra or Dexcom CGM or things like that, where you can obviously see your levels much quicker. You can see the trends and the arrows, and people can and potentially have the Clarity or the Libra link, so that parents can maybe see the levels. I can imagine them early days, like it was just sleepless nights, because you were just worrying, is he okay? How is he? Do I need to go finger prick him? Do I need to check? Because I look at my son now, he's three. Like, I can't even imagine him being diabetic and me having to deal with this. It must have been a lot.
Yeah, and I think in the first few weeks of diagnosis, they were asking us to do finger pricks during the night every 2 hours. So we did that for a long time, you know, and that was very difficult to get out of the habit of doing that, if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. But I think technology is an amazing thing, but as a parent, sometimes, you know, and I suppose it's the age of Lachlan as well, we're now handing over that care to him and to the tech. And that's cool, you know, and, you know, as much as I am 100% behind technology and I think it's phenomenal, but it's quite hard to give up that bit of control that we have. And, you know, I'll constantly text Lachlan, scan, check, do this, and you think, let it be. But as a parent, you can't help it. But as I say, you get to the stage, you just think, right, we need to get on with this and we just need to do it. And it's for the best for him in the long run. And that kind of how we did the first few years.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see if we can bring Tony back in. Tony, are you there?
Yeah, I'm back. Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yeah. All good. Hand the baton back to you, my friend.
Thanks.
Excellent, thanks for that, guys. Okay, so we're going to head back to Lachlan now, just to chat a little bit through his journey with type 1 so far. So we've heard a little bit about, you know, mum having to give the first insulin injection in hospital, which obviously you won't remember. So how is it you administer insulin currently? What types of insulin is it that you're on, and has that changed over time?
It has. I was on, obviously, the pump. So I started off in injections and then moved on to the pump and then went back onto the injections. So that's always been over-rapid, but I've changed my nighttime jag twice.
No, just once.
Once. So I've been on...
Traceba now.
I'm on Traceba now, so that's what I've changed, probably.
And have you always been on MDI, or were you ever on like a mixed insulin when you were first diagnosed?
No, never mixed. Always just Novorapid and Levemir to start with.
Interesting. And it's interesting to pick up that, and you'd mentioned this in your sort of quickfire introduction as well, that you've moved from MDI pumping and back to MDI again, potentially looking to get onto Omnipod at some point. What are your thoughts on that? Like, why is it that you've moved between the two and then potentially looking to get back on pump again? Is there any sort of pros and cons that you've picked up on over the years?
Well, when I initially had the pump, I hated that it gave me like alerts. So I would be in class and I would get an alert, and everybody would just look at me. So I felt very uncomfortable in school. So I would never kind of want to wear it in school. So, but I think with the, and I was always connected to something. Like when I had the pump, I was always on something. I felt as if it was never going to leave me. Which with the injections, I feel more free. So I think when I switch to the Omnipod, I think I'll still have that freedom because I won't have a wire connected to me.
Lachlan obviously started on the insulin. He was obviously in pains to start with, and then a year after, it was just over a year after diagnosis, he was put on the pump. So he was put on the Medtronic pump, and for a long time Lachlan was quite happy on the pump, especially primary school. He was okay-ish. He didn't particularly like it, but his control was good, and I think, you know, he was okay-ish. But he came off the pump due to mental health challenges, but obviously I think that we're going to chat more about that later on. But that's why we ended up coming off the pump. That was in probably March 2021, I think. And he's now in a very lucky position. He knows an awful lot more about technology, and he knows, you know, due to the charity, we've had a lot of connections with tech companies and stuff. So he's taken it upon himself to go and learn more about the tech that's available. Sorry, that's the dog in the background. It's not Lachlan. he's learned a lot more. So when he found out about Omnipod 5 and the hybrid closed loop with Dexcom, he was like, that's what he wants to do for his choice. And the life that he leads, you know, I think that he's decided that that's what he thinks is going to be much better, because his control at the moment, his numbers are just kind of all over the place. But I suppose that goes with being 14 years old and, you know, going through everything else that happens at 14. So that's kind of how we've ended up going between both.
Right, and that's really interesting. It's obviously totally normal as well to experience that sort of burnout with the technology, you know, getting fed up of the alerts, and knowledge is power with diabetes. Sometimes, you know, knowing what else is out there and being able to sort of jump between different types of treatments.
Yeah. Well, I'm going for Rory out. Sorry, we're just going to get rid of the dog because I think he's got an ear infection and he's rubbing his head against us constantly. We're going, please put him out. Sorry.
He just wanted to be involved. We're having a riveting chat. He wants to get involved.
He's involved with everything else. So, yeah, he's usually involved with everything that we do. Sorry, but that, as I say, that's how we've ended up kind of going between the two. But he's due to go on to Dexcom, I think, in August this year. And then he's just waiting till the training comes out for Omnipod 5.
Right, excellent. So that's another one for both of you. Again, is there anything that you know now that you wish you'd have known earlier on, earlier in diagnosis?
Well, you want to speak about that. Is there anything you wish you'd known?
Well, when I was that wee, it was all your control.
I suppose I wish we had known the amount of support that was actually out there, and being able to know where to turn to in times of crisis, or if you just needed someone to chat to or reach out to and, you know, speak to. And I think that's a big part of living with type 1 diabetes, is actually knowing where to turn if you need someone to talk to. And I think social media is an amazing platform for everything, but you see a lot of things in social media and you think, oh my goodness, my wee boy, he's 4 and his levels are all over the place, you know, and somebody else is posting graphs of this perfect blood sugar and range for, and you think, what am I doing wrong? And I think it's learning that, you know, that's actually not the perfect life. That's not how everybody living with type 1 diabetes actually functions on a daily basis. So I suppose that, and just really everything that kind of surrounds the condition, you know, but you live and learn and, you know, you develop every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's it for the sort of questions that we had around sort of diagnosis and journey with the diagnosis. Is there anything else you'd like to mention that we haven't covered already?
I think
that's everything.
Cool, we're going to come back to the sort of mental health aspect again later on, like you'd said there, Leslie. Tom, I think we're going to move on to chat about Lachlan's legacy at the charity now.
Absolutely, let's do this. So would you, either of you, both of you, describe to us what Lachlan's legacy is, when was it started, what was the idea behind Lachlan's legacy? Who'd like to start?
I'll start it off. I'll describe kind of how Lachlan's legacy became Lachlan's legacy. So I got invited up to 10 Downing Street through JDRF.
You
talk
about breaking your leg.
So I broke my leg when I was 9. And that caused some mental health, and I went through quite a rough patch in life. And then after my knee was healed, I wanted to do something for charity, so I decided to do a stadium marathon around all the Scottish stadiums. So I raised £10,500 for JDRF and the Chris Boyd charity, which is a mental health charity. So after I'd done that, I got invited with JDRF up to 10 Downing Street, which I met Theresa May at the time, who had type 1 diabetes. And I met this
doctor.
I met a doctor in 10 Downing Street, and he was like, I've been following you, and he lived in England. I've been following your story. I think it's a brilliant story, but what are you going to do next? And me and my mum just kind of looked at each other and thought, that was kind of done. So once we left 10 Downing Street, we were on the train home, and I said to my mum, what about starting my own charity? And my mum was like, Lachlan, I think that's a great idea. So that's where kind of Lachlan's legacy was born.
Yeah. So as Lachlan said, he did his stadium marathon. So he did 28 miles in 4 days around his PFL Premiership stadiums in Scotland. Wow. And he did, so he did 2 miles each. So that was 8 laps of each pitch. And we also did Hamden.
And this was after a serious injury, right?
It was less than a year. So he broke his leg at the end of May, and he shattered his kneecap and broke the bone under his knee. And so he needed an operation at that point, and then was putting a toe to hip plaster. After that, he was then put in a leg brace for a number of months, and that was over the kind of summer holidays. And Lachlan was very active and still going to his football training. And we speak a lot about football, but Lachlan's escape was football. Absolute escape was going to play football. Just being one of the boys, you know, doing his thing. And that was taken away from him, but he still wanted to go and he still would go to tournaments and do all of that sort of thing during the holidays. But gradually that started to slow down and we noticed it was slowing down. And then he had to go back to school. So obviously here in Scotland, we go back to school the kind of middle of August. And people who are on this tonight will know exactly what I'm meaning when I say this, but kids living with type 1 diabetes, they find transition from teacher to teacher, especially in primary, quite difficult because they have to learn to trust somebody else for a year to look after them. And Lachlan was very, very lucky that he had a classroom assistant here, Sarah, who had him from primary one and was a, she was like a second mum to him. But Lachlan found it really difficult to build that relationship with his new P6 teacher. And that, again, is not like Lachlan, and we noticed that in school, that he was really struggling to build a relationship with her, and he just wasn't in a very good place. And thankfully, and I say this a lot, Sarah was there because Lachlan ended up using his type 1 diabetes to avoid doing things. So he knew he couldn't go out and play football the same as everyone else at break and at lunch, or run about the playground and do stuff. So he was putting, not a lot, but he was putting a little extra insulin through his pump just at break and at lunchtime. So he was going hypo, and then he was avoiding going outside. So he got to sit in, you know, like the, like he got to sit in with everyone who was in over break and lunch. And this became a bit of a routine, and Sarah had picked up on it, and she's like, he's continually hypo at break and at lunch. But whilst that was all happening, Lachlan's, he was getting really grumpy, he was getting really frustrated, he didn't want to go to school, he was getting really angry. And I remember having the conversation with Scott and saying, this is going to go one of two ways. He's either going to get really angry and, you know, explode in school, or he's going to get really angry and he's going to burst into tears. And thankfully, it was the second one. And he admitted to Sarah, his classroom assistant, that yeah, he was feeling really, it was, everything was too much for him. And at that, again, it was like our world had crashed down about us, because you're thinking, what 9-year-old is having to go through this? But it was because life as he knew it again was changing and had changed. So we got him the help that he needed to, and then he had to go back into the hospital the end of November. So just after he'd turned 10, and he had to get the, he had pins and things in his knee and they wanted to remove it. So he went back and got the metalwork removed from the knee. It didn't go very particularly well, but that's another story. And then about 10 days later, he was back in hospital with severe cellulitis, and they said that there could have been a possibility he may have lost his leg because the infection was so bad. Wow. So again, you can imagine that was huge turmoil for everyone. And Lachlan, and after he felt better, it was just about the Christmas time, and he said, Mum, I want to do something. He said, because we didn't know where to turn to get the help I needed. And I thought, right, okay, so as Lachlan said earlier, he's a huge Kilmarnock fan, so contacted Greg at Kilmarnock, who's the general manager, and said, look, can we do something in football? And the stadium marathon kind of grew arms and legs from there, and we're really lucky that the whole of Scottish football got behind him. But one of the things is Lachlan's mum, he did his stadium marathon, he walked the 2 miles, and actually Chris Bright from TDFC flew up on the Friday morning. So we started on the Tuesday night and finished it on the Saturday, but Chris flew up on the Friday morning and met us at St Mirren. He was supposed to come and be with us at Rangers and Hampden and Celtic Park and stuff, but flights and things didn't allow it. But he ended up getting us at Hampden, at St Mirren. But we couldn't pick him up because obviously Lachlan knew nothing about this. And when he got to St Mirren, they put him in the mascot costume, and it was one of the warmest. The mascot costume was disgusting. It was so smelly, and they put him in it, and he had to hang about in it and do the walk in the panda costume. And then he took the head off, and Lachlan nearly decombusted when he seen Chris, because Chris is one of his heroes. He loves him.
Oh my goodness.
No, it was amazing. It really was amazing. And but we noticed when we were speaking to people at the stadiums, they knew a lot of information about mental health and where to get access for help, but they had no clue about type 1 diabetes. Some of these stadiums that we went to actually had type 1 players playing in their first team, and they knew nothing about it. That's frightening. So again, yeah. That was kind of my thinking behind Lachlan's legacy. Like, we need to educate people, or let people be much more aware of type 1 diabetes. You know, not people who live with type 1 diabetes because they know it, the people who don't, and how we could do it. And that's kind of where Lachlan's legacy kind of was born from. So yeah.
Wow, that is just what a journey you've both been on. And a big pat on the back, Lachlan, for all the amazing things that you've done. Like I say, you're 9 years old and you have a really difficult time with your mental health, and it's good that you were able to find that person, that TA Sarah, to talk and open up. And after going through all that and then having the cellulitis and all that ordeal, like, to come out the other end and want to help people and raise awareness and set up the charity, it's just you're such an inspirational young man. It's absolutely amazing, because, like, I wouldn't have blamed you just to go, you know what, I just want some chill time now after all that, like, but you took it on your shoulders and went, you know what, I want to talk and I want to share, and it's just well done to you.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about the sort of things that Lachlan's Legacy do? I know you do sort of information sessions and workshops and get together days. Can you tell us, for people that are listening and will listen back on the podcast, like, what sort of things that do you guys do, and what's for both of you, what's like the biggest success or achievement today? I'm sure there are loads and loads and loads, and I don't want to discredit anything, but is there any sort of proud moments that you've had in this journey together so far with Lachlan's Legacy?
I'll start off with probably my proudest moment is my charity. Like, one of the things I've done is when I sent 4 vanloads diabetes supplies to Ukraine. Because I woke up one morning and saw it in the news, and I was just like, I want to help them. I felt bad that we had everything and they had nothing. So I sent 4 vanloads of diabetes supplies to Ukraine. So that was probably one of the proudest moments, because I was helping others and not just me.
I just love that. I feel like you just want to help the community. You want to help people from, like, all over the world. And you're one of them people that will do everything to help other people. It's just amazing. Wow. What about you, Leslie? What's your biggest proudest moment?
I don't know. There's been so many with Lachlan. I really think I think probably one of our the proudest moments that I think we've had so far is actually doing the first T1D. Raising awareness and understanding of type 1 diabetes in football presentations to youth coaches. And I think that had always been the initial plan. That was always what this was built on. And I think that moment of being able to stand up there and put Lachlan's idea and the things that he wanted to do and actually put it into motion, I think that was one of the proudest moments that I've certainly had. I mean, the Ukraine, sending those, you know, the vans at various different times and engaging with the Ukrainian community here in Scotland has been huge. You know, that there's so many, there really is, there's so many. But I think for me, probably standing up there that first time and offering the training that Lachlan so desperately wanted to be a thing was probably the biggest, that was definitely the biggest achievement for me and definitely one of my proudest moments.
What sort of things are you guys, like, working on right now in terms of sessions or workshops? And are there any sort of challenges that you have faced or are facing with the charity?
Well, it is my charity, but I've got my own PA and it's my mum. So I tell my mum what to do and she goes away and does it. So my mum can describe everything in more detail.
Delegation there.
Absolutely. So we've been up to loads and loads of things. So as I say, we now have the raising awareness and understanding of type 1 diabetes in football, and it's a workshop course, and there's, you know, there's some learning after it, and that's just recently became CPD accredited. So again, that's huge for us. We've signed up with Dundee Football Club, and we're working with Kilmarnock and various other kind of like football teams and clubs around, usually mostly the west of Scotland at the moment, but Dundee signed up with us because obviously one of our ambassadors is Paul McMullen, who lives with Type 1 and played with Dundee, and he had us up there for the day very recently, and they are first team physio. Bruce Smith, who I'm sure some of you will know, has got type 1 diabetes as well, and their first doctor has type 1 diabetes, so they were not getting away with not signing up for the training. So we have that, and the idea of that is to have this available in all sports throughout Scotland. And I know that sounds like a huge ask, but we have recently started, or Lachlan has really recently started up a T1D and Me Giving Youth a Voice steering group. And that's a youth group for young people aged between 12 to 18 here in Scotland. And the kids that are involved in it are from all over Scotland at the moment. And they don't all live with type 1 diabetes, which I think is a really positive, you know, way forward. But they've all got links to type 1. So they potentially have a sibling or a parent that's got type 1 or just a teammate or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. But they've all got links to type 1 diabetes. And they are currently working away on organising kind of various youth events, but the big thing that they're wanting to do the first year is set up T1D and Me Giving Youth a Voice, and it's a questionnaire, and the initial questionnaire goes to every single 12 to 18 year old in full-time education here in, so it's going to be based in Ayrshire. We're going to do the pilot here in East Ayrshire, and then it's going to go out to South and North Ayrshire. And we've got the backing of local government for that, and backing of East Ayrshire Council and our head of education, Linda. Wow, so they're backing everything that we're doing for that. So that initial questionnaire is really just to see if people want to get involved and would be willing to take a much more in-depth questionnaire, and the kids can then break that information up and then target the next questionnaire that they want to send out to the right people.
And when we caught up a few months ago and we were planning this night and we were talking for a few hours, and you had COVID at the time, bless you. We were talking about all these things, and I remember you telling me about the program, and you were saying, look, it's their agenda, isn't it? They're coming together. It's not me. It's not Lachlan. This is Lachlan's legacy, but it's the guys, like you say, people who've got diabetes or connections, and it's them steering that discussion and steering that. Right, this is what we want to do, and we're going to aim for this, and that's just phenomenal. Well done. That's great.
Yeah, and I think for us as a charity, you know, take off the mum hat here of Lachlan, for us as a charity, moving the charity forward, who is the generation that's going to lead this, these young people? They're the next generation that's kind of going to come through and make a difference, so we need to listen to their voice. And it's not, you know, Diabetes UK do phenomenal work in this area, as do JDRF. This is not a support group, this is a let's make a change and let's listen to their voice and see what they can do. So from that questionnaire, what they want to do is hold road shows, and so it's really just kind of a bit like a kind of get together day, but they want tech companies involved in it, guest speakers, but they want it for only the young people aged between 12 to 18. They don't want parents involved. And I 100% agree with them in that one, because people speak to the adults, they don't particularly speak to the children sometimes. And I think it would be really good for the kids to be able to just have a free space to open, you know, ask questions openly. But at these events, what they're wanting to do is set up working parties. So if if these young people are interested in technology, they can, you know, go and be with a group of young people who are interested in tech. If they're interested in, you know, doing stuff within education, within sport, that sort of thing. But from the T1D and Me Giving Youth a Voice, what we've actually recently just became involved with is the T1D and Me Inspirational Athlete. And this kind of came about because we received some funding from a doctor who had passed away, and we thought, what are we going to do in his memory that we can make, you know, that we can actually make a change? So we do have some inspirational athletes who live with type 1 diabetes, but, you know, and they're involved and they're ambassadors for Lachlan's legacy. But the idea behind this, the steering group, was these young people are actually going to be the lead within that sport. So we've got a boxer, yeah. We've got a kickboxer, we've got a girl that does twirling, we've got somebody that's in gymnastics, these sort of things. We've hopefully got a hockey player coming on. Their story resonates within their sport. Lachlan's story doesn't, you know. So it needs to be a young person whose story is inspirational to those young people who are within that sport or within that wow. environment. You know, so that's kind of, that's very, very, yeah. very, but that's the idea behind all of that.
It's absolutely amazing, guys. Like, literally everything you're doing. Can I ask both of you, what motivates you for Lachlan's legacy? Let's start with Lachlan. What motivates you to be doing all these things that you're doing for the charity?
To make a difference to the whole, all of the young people, because I think everyone needs it. Because, well, I've been there and done it when I went through rough patches. So I think they need the help that I didn't get. So I think they need to have that chance that I obviously didn't get when I went through the rough patch.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, Lachlan. But I think what motivates me is just seeing the difference that can be made, and you know, hearing back from people that actually are. They say to you, do you know, we had no idea about type 1, and you know, it's not about people feeling sorry for somebody living with type 1 diabetes. That is the absolute opposite of what we want. You know, it's just to reduce that stigma, and
yeah,
you know, for that limited, oh, you don't look diabetic, or did you eat too many sweeties, or your mum gave you too many sweeties, or you know, I've had it so many times, as you know, Lachlan was diagnosed at 4. Oh, at 4, he wouldn't have eaten that much sugar, but you know, by the time 4, you know, is he still got all his teeth and that? And you just think, what? So I think that me a wee bit, but I think. You just keep going because it's part of our everyday life, and I think if you can make a small difference to someone, that just
absolutely. I don't know, and amazing people like yourselves. I don't know if you've seen today, Pavka, Jazz Seffi, Renza, from Australia, have produced mini sort of packs really for. The importance of language matters, and you've just hit on the nail there, and it's really sad and it's really frustrating. But I guess our sort of role, I guess, is raising that awareness and getting that knowledge out there. Because like you say, we know about diabetes, we know what it's like, and but it's spreading out there, isn't it? And I love all the things that you're doing with the coaching and everything there. So absolutely great. Can I ask? What's the future for Lachlan's legacy? What do you reckon? Any ideas? You don't want to obviously give away your next plan.
I think the big plan is to have this available in this course available in all sports throughout Scotland, but not just Scotland, it can go wherever, but also have this in workplaces and throughout education as well. I mean, I work in education and I think it's really important, even like starting with probationary teachers, just giving them that basic awareness, because everyone in a school needs to have a basic awareness if there's a young person with type 1 diabetes. The same in the workplace. If everyone had a basic awareness, you might not get the stairs, that sort of thing. But the big thing that we've got planned is we're having a day, because we do have the links with Ukraine, we're actually having a day and Killy Community are actually, they're backing us with this, they're supporting it, so we're kind of doing a conjunction, and it's going to be a day for Ukrainian families who live with type 1 diabetes in the west of Scotland, and they're all going to come to Rugby Park for the day, and we're going to have translators, we're going to have some of the tech companies there just to kind of chat to people and really just have like a nice open day that people can come and get together and meet other Ukrainian families who are here under the same circumstances as they are. So we're going to do that, it's the next kind of big thing, and then the kids are going to get the questionnaire out, and they're going to have a football day. So we are hoping to have Paul McMullen, Scott Allen, if we can get Jack up, to do some coaching at it, and some of our patrons like Jamie and Kirk to come along and just kind of be, you know, be involved and coach the kids and have a kind of get together day free of charge for the children as well. But I think the big thing that we're looking at, and we've kind of put the wheels in motion for this, is we really want to have a T1D and me raising awareness double-decker bus. We want a bus that can go to events, that can go to schools, that can go anywhere, and it's like an interactive bus that's a learning zone, you know, that we can drive it there, take it there, drop it off, and we can, you know, hit a school in a day and stuff, and the kids can come in and out, they can play games. We've recently went into collaboration with DigiBeat, so they're going to give us some of their information, you know, the information they have. We can do some educational things, we can raise awareness, and it can all be done in a fun way. So that's probably the biggest thing that we've got. Yeah, you probably all think we're nutters.
I look forward to seeing the bus. Oh my god, that's so cool. That is absolutely amazing. Lachlan, where can people learn more about Lachlan's legacy and check out all the social media accounts and stuff? Where can people go?
We've got a TikTok. So we're mainly on social media, which my mum will probably, if you text in, get back to you. But it's mainly on social media and Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, LinkedIn.
We've also got a website, but it's absolutely atrocious at the moment, and we're working with a company here in Scotland through the Scottish Tech Army. Lachlan was part of a group through school who won the Scottish Digi Inventors Challenge, and they had came up with a digital tech solution for young people living with type 1 diabetes. So going back to the T1D raising awareness certificate, so what the second part of that is, if a coach says that they have a young person living with type 1 diabetes within their team, we then facilitate a meeting, and we go in and we sit down and have a meeting with the health and wellbeing officer, the parent and carers, the coaches, and the young person themselves, and they actually come up with their own care plan. We take nothing to do with it, we just facilitate the meeting, and it's really just to get everyone's ideas and, you know, write down what the hypo treatments are, write down the emergency contact numbers, you know, write down what the coach is happy to be involved with. Does the coach want further training? So we signpost them to NHS, we signpost them to DigiBeat, all of these sorts of things. But the kids came up with a digital solution and putting that onto an app, and how that could work as an app, and how it could be an interactive app for coaches, parents, young people, and how it could be developed. So they won that through a competition, and they did amazingly well with it. And that's then opened doors for Scottish Tech Army to get a company called BGISS involved. So they're going to try and come up with some digital tech for us, but they're heavily involved in changing the website. So the website that we have at the moment is okay, but it's me that does it, and it's, let's be honest, it's a bit rubbish, but hopefully in the next few months that will have changed, and we'll have a much better platform to share information to.
Sounds great. Dan says she's tried to donate on the website, but it says PayPal unavailable.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It won't work. I don't know why we can't get it to work. I think we've contacted like the thing, and it won't do it. It won't let us.
Keep an eye on Dan, because it's amazing that people are wanting to help charity and give what they can. So
and I think that is one of the biggest, that's the biggest barriers, and I know that was one of the things that was asked earlier. The biggest barrier that we have is trying to source funding, you know, to keep this going. Yeah. It's voluntary at the moment. We did have an employee that worked with us 10 hours a week, but the funding for that through National Lottery has now stopped. But just in the note for National Lottery, and it's something that you can keep an eye on, and I'll let you know when it's coming out, but National Lottery have chosen Lachlan and Lachlan's legacy as an inspirational young person, and they're going to do a podcast on him. And National Lottery have already been up to Scotland and did an on location filming with him, and next Thursday we're going down to London to a studio to do the final part of the podcast down there, and then that's going to be released throughout all National Lottery stuff. So that's going to be a huge way to raise awareness.
You just need your bus, that's all you need, guys. You'll be traveling down to London in style, absolutely. Thank you so much. I think that's been really, really fascinating to get to know you guys and Lachlan's legacy. Are you okay for time? I'm looking at the clock. I will hand back to Tony. I know this section, he's got a few questions he wants to ask on mental health, peer support, and advocacy. So I will hand back to Tony, but if you do need to jump off any time, because I know it is quite late, amazing. You guys are just great. Over to you, Tony.
Thanks, guys. I'm absolutely blown away just by the sheer amount of things that you've been involved in. And like you said, it is like a voluntary thing. It's not like this huge charity with all this funding that's coming towards it. It's, you know, it's a small operation. The things that you guys have pulled off, I'm sure, would make some of the big charities quite jealous.
Yeah, they did say that when Lachlan won the Quality in Care. The Simon Neil said he had to slow down or he was going to take his job from him. So, yeah, that was quite entertaining. And when we went up, he hosted an event in Parliament in January, and I think some of the ministers there were a bit thinking, oh, this could be the next first minister here. So that.
Well, that's absolutely brilliant. I'm absolutely blown away just by the amount of stuff that's been going on. It's excellent. So we'd like to start off round up.
You've actually been in the same room, Tony, as well. When JDRF did the Discovery Day in Scotland, Tony was there, and you guys
really?
Were there, I believe.
Yeah.
Next time, you'll catch up, get a photo, and
So we'd like to round up all of our guest speaker chats just by chatting a little bit about mental health and peer support. So I just want to ask you both if you could chat a little bit about mental health, why it's important to you, and just some things that you do to improve your mental health.
Well, I'll speak for experience. I think the main thing about mental health is talking to someone. I think that's the main factor. The key factor of mental health. I don't think I would get. I think I would have struggled a lot more if I didn't speak to my mum, my dad, my football coach, my teacher. I think I would have struggled a lot more than I actually did.
Yeah. And what do you do now? To drive me insane. That's what he does now to keep him mentioning him.
I think just enjoy every situation you get. I think there's nothing to be really stressful about.
You do get annoyed about your levels and stuff, and
that's diabetes for you at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's true. I think I worry a lot about Lachlan's mental health, and that is just through past experience. I mean, when we did have diabetes burnout in the, so it was during the second lockdown, that was a really hard one for me because Lachlan and I have a very, very close relationship. We go on like a house on fire, we really do, and we do a lot of things together. We any of the adventures we go on together. And Lachlan couldn't speak to me, so you knew then he was in a really awful, horrible place. And after, you know, the situation, we uploaded his pump and the hospital phoned and they were like, that was a lot of information missing. And we live on a farm, so Lachlan was completely isolated during COVID and being, you know, we were completely isolated from everyone. And at times that was a really nice thing, but obviously being 12 years old, that was a really challenging time. You know, he wasn't at school, he wasn't at football training again. So life again had changed. And I think the first lockdown, we were all in our own bubble, and I think most folk would agree with that. But when it happened for the second time, it was like you realised everything that had been taken away. And that's when it kind of came out, and Lachlan had stopped using his pump that time. He wasn't checking his blood sugar. He wasn't putting insulin through his pump. And he was telling us that he was doing it, and he wasn't. And he was getting to the stage he was lying very well, which was really concerning. And we ended up, he got rushed into hospital, and he wasn't in full-blown DKA. He wasn't, so we managed to catch it at a time that he wasn't, you know, hooked up to machines and things like that, that we didn't get to that stage. But that was a hard-hitting conversation that Lachlan had to have with his consultant. And I think, without putting it back on myself, but I was really upset with Lachlan that he couldn't, he didn't speak to me, and I was angry at him. But then I had to go through a process of thinking he obviously couldn't speak to me about it. He said he was such an, he was in such a dark place. So, you know, that was quite challenging and tricky for me as his mum. But yeah, I worry a lot about his mental health. But I think that, I think every parent of every child throughout the world probably at the moment worries about their child's mental health, whether they live with type 1 diabetes or they don't.
Wow, yeah, and you add in all those different things, you know, you're adding in type 1 diabetes, troubles with technology, and then yeah, also lockdown at the same time, being isolated already. It's very, very tough. So well done both of you for being so candid about that and being able to chat, because it's such an important thing to chat about and be open about, but it is something people do struggle with, so it's such yeah, an important thing to discuss openly.
Yeah, and I don't think people, as Lachlan says, they don't talk about it enough. You know, going back to his steering group, there's a few kids at his school that have got type 1, and he'd said to them, do you want to join this group? You know, it's dead exciting, do you want to do this? And they were like that, no. And that was straight away, it was a no. They hide it, they don't want to talk about it, you know, and that's, but that still happens in adulthood as well, you know, and people don't want to let people know that they have type 1 diabetes. And I think that scares me a wee bit, but you can't, not everyone's the same as we are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Why do you think that is? And do you think there's any way to sort of bring people around to the importance of peer support?
I think the only way we change that is educating people, and, you know, educating them in a way that it's, you're raising the awareness and you're raising the understanding, and that then leads to the breakdown of the barriers, and it leads to well, trying to reduce the stigma. And there you go, you've got people who are away representing Great Britain at, you know, the Dia Euros, doing amazing things. You know, we've got professional footballers, with professional athletes doing amazing things, but it's not celebrated enough, I don't think. People who are achieving at a really high level are great role models, but I think the more people who live with the condition who are, forgive me for saying this, normal everyday folk, that's what resonates with everybody else, because they go like, oh, that's just like the local buddy and they're doing really well with that. So I think it's just getting the knowledge out there and actually saying to people, it's okay to say that you've got type 1 diabetes and nobody's going to judge you for it. Would you agree, Lachlan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the way I would describe it, but maybe not everyone would, but that's the kind of way we feel about it.
And is there any other advice that you would give to a parent of a child who's newly diagnosed?
I would probably say, this is the hardest thing that you're ever going to have to deal with, but you will deal with it. And you have your days where it's really tough, and you're allowed to cry, and you're allowed to get really angry, and you're allowed to hate diabetes for a bit, but you'll always bounce back. And I think saying to them, there are people out there who are going to be very honest with you and tell you the truth, and there's other people out there that will just, you know, not judge you, but if you are having bad days, there are people who kind of look at you and think, oh, aye, whatever. That you are going to get people who think that you've given your child too much sugar or all of that stuff, and you have to rise above that to an extent. But the biggest thing that I would ask them to do is tell people about it. Do you know let them know about type 1, but yeah, let them know that it's very difficult, but having type 1 diabetes absolutely doesn't stop you doing anything. But if they have this young person with type 1 diabetes, they need to get a good support team around them, because that's how they're going to get through it.
That's brilliant, and you guys have done such a brilliant job sort of fighting that fight with Lachlan's legacy as well, which is just absolutely brilliant. Just one last one, a nice happy one for us to round up your chat today, and this is one for both of you. What are your sort of hopes and aspirations for yourself, for Lachlan's legacy, diabetes care, just everything for the future? What are your hopes and aspirations?
Lachlan's looking at me, he's like, don't know, mum, because I think he's just lost the plot. I don't know, what do you think for diabetes? What would you like to see? Well, everybody would say a cure.
I don't think that's going to happen in my lifetime. Probably what my charity's trying to do, everybody to be educated, I think. That's what I'd like to see in the future. Just, oh, like, you go somewhere, oh, are you doing your bloods? And just they know what's happening.
Yeah, and understanding. Yeah, I think as Lachlan said, everybody says they want the cure. I think I would love for technology to become so advanced and it's going there that it almost feels like you don't live with type 1 diabetes. And we are getting there, and you know, the changes in the 10 years since Lachlan's been diagnosed are incredible. So we know that things are changing rapidly. I would love it for it not to be a postcode lottery, and I would love it even more if it was something, you know, that Lachlan would really like, the Omnipod 5 and Dexcom combo. They could have it, you know, as soon as possible, and it's not going to be a waiting game, you know, that these things were actually available straight away for people. And I think, just as Lachlan said, that people understand about it and there's no judgment and there's no stigma. And I know that that's never going to happen, but that would be a huge thing for us.
Excellent. Thanks for that. And thanks so much for your time today, guys, Lachlan and Leslie, just for chatting through it, all the things you do with the charity. I'm honestly so amazed and blown away by it all still. Thanks so much for your time today and joining us on Diabetes Chat. Is there anything you wanted to add in there, Tom?
I just think it's been such a fascinating chat, and I've been following the guys for the past year, really checking in, seeing all the amazing things that they're doing, and it's been an honour to have them both on tonight. Lachlan, the first ever teenager on the Diabetes Chat, so it's been amazing having taken that and having you here. But honestly, well done for everything you're doing. Keep it up. You're such an inspirational mum and son. Just wow, we're just blown away. And you know what I mean, we could have spoke for hours and hours, and we have on Zoom many a times, Leslie, haven't we? But I hope that we've done it justice tonight in the sort of hour or so, just kind of having a sort of a glimpse of everything, really. But I just wanted to maybe finish it. You asked what sort of tips and advice would you give a young child, a parent of a young child with diabetes. Lachlan, can I just ask, what advice would you give to someone else living with diabetes? So a child who same sort of age or a bit younger, or like and who may be finding it a bit difficult at the minute, or from either a lived experience you've had, what advice would you give them?
I would say to them, you can achieve anything, you can do anything. I think type 1 diabetes doesn't stop you. It might put a roadblock, but you overtake it, really. You keep going and you don't stop. And if you're obviously going through a rough time, just speak to people and it'll become a lot easier than keeping it to yourself, because then that can cause you more distress than you're in already.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Honestly, thank you so much, Leslie and Lachlan, for your time tonight. Guys, go check out the guys, like they said on their social medias. And yeah, you'll see all the up-to-date things that they're both doing for Lachlan's legacy. Thank you, Leslie. It's been absolutely great. And Lachlan as well. It's been brilliant. Thank you, guys.
Thanks very much for having us. We really appreciate it. It's been brilliant. And thanks so much for all your support that you've given us, not just tonight, but over the years and things. It's been great. So,
of course.
Thank you.
I'm just waiting for that bus now. I'm looking out my window and I'm just waiting for the Lachlan Legacy bus, and I'm getting on that bus and we are going to go for a drive.
It's nice stuff about Harry Potter. The night bus.
Absolutely love it. I could just see it now, traveling the country and dropping in and going to schools and events and all sorts. Sign me up. I want to be part of it. And well done, guys. Honestly, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.